Welcome, 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 geeks and nerds, girls and boys, to a brand new edition of Geek to Me Radio. Today we'll be talking Tenet with Brett Hoffman, director of marketing for Marcus Theaters. Also talk about Marcus Theaters reopening, why it's safe and why you should go. Then we'll talk with creator David Pepos about his new project, The OZ, how you can back it on Kickstarter. Stand by.
We're talking TV, comics and movies, and video games. And if you don't know, Star Trek from Star Wars, we'll try to explain.
And for those of you who have found us online, we appreciate your doing that. If you're streaming this, be it whatever source, iTunes, Podomatic, Stitcher, iHeartRadio, we appreciate your finding. Make sure you're subscribing, and also make sure if you're hearing this on YouTube, you subscribe to the channel and you click that little bell so you get notifications about our new episodes when they happen. We've got a full show. Let's blast right in. Right now, we've got Brett Hoffman from Marcus Theaters, the marketing guru from there. We haven't talked to you for a while because, unfortunately, as I've been lamenting weekly, movie theaters have been closed, but now, gloriously, they're open again. No one can be more excited than you and I, Brett.
That's right. We are very happy to be open. In fact, in St. Louis, 7 of our 9 theaters are open for business right now.
And I know it's been a long time coming. Obviously, a lot of hoops to jump through, things that had to be put in place to make sure they're open safely. Talk a little bit about, on your end, logistically, what all was done.
Yeah, well, I think what was most important for us is that anyone who comes through our building, whether they were an employee or whether they were a guest, we wanted to make sure they came into a safe and comfortable environment. And we're part of a program called Cinema Safe, and that's from the National Association of Theater Owners. They put together a list of protocols and guidelines with the help of some epidemiologists to support a safe return to the movies for all. And these guidelines span everything from requiring masks to social distancing to reduced capacity in our theaters to air filtration and more. And I can tell you, we're very proud to say that we meet or exceed all of these protocols that are within CinemaSafe. I know you just went to the theaters to see Tenet at our Chesterfield location. What did you think of your experience, and what was it like for you your first time back?
I thought it was great. Like I said, I've been champing at the bit to get back to movie theaters. You know what a movie guy I am, and it just, for me, I've said before on this show, it is almost a religious experience. It's sacrosanct going to the movie, getting the popcorn, sitting in the theater, kind of feeding off the energy of the crowd, you know, pre-COVID and things like that. It's great to try to do at home, but it can't be recreated. So we went and saw Tenet on Labor Day at the Chesterfield location, and it was great. I mean, the staff was all wearing masks. When I went to get my soda, I bought it there. I know you guys have the app. You can get it, order it online, but I went ahead and got it there because my wife was going, well, I'm not sure if I want this. Are we going to split something? So we got it there. The drinks, the woman was there waiting. She took my receipt, got the cup for me with gloves on, filled it with the amount of ice that I wanted, asked what beverage I wanted. Diet Dr. Pepper was filled up. It was great. It was seamless. I felt very safe and comfortable. And then I noticed one of the things that caught my eyes, you have the door kick. So you don't even need to touch the doors to open them. You put your foot on that little metal piece that sticks out, and you can open the doors with your foot so you don't have to touch anything. So I thought I felt perfectly safe. And I think that was, everything you guys did was great. It was, it's always clean at the Marcus Theaters. That's one of the things I always harp on, is that it's tidier than most theaters before COVID. So it was even more so post COVID. And I think for anyone wondering, it's perfectly safe. And I think kudos to all of you who did all that work.
Yeah, well, and I specifically, you hit on basically all the points that we really tried to incorporate. We encourage people to buy their tickets online and buy their food and beverage online before they come for a low-contact experience. All guests and our employees will be wearing masks except when eating or drinking. You mentioned we've got foot openers on every door so that you don't need to grab the doors. That's for low contact right there. There's hand sanitizers at all entrances, down all hallways, and in front of all of the auditoriums. And every single seat that's occupied is thoroughly cleaned, sanitized, and we even mark it with a tape seal that you need to remove in order to sit there. So I think we've incorporated a lot of thoughtful processes for people to have a safe and comfortable environment when they're coming to go see the movies. And there are a lot more protocols as well. If anyone wants to go online, you can go check them out at marcustheaters.com or direct at marcustheaters.com/reopening. But I'm glad you had a great experience. And I can tell you, if you're looking to come see the movies, I can assure you that you're going to have a great and comfortable and safe experience at a Marcus Theater with these protocols that we have in place.
And I got to tell you, I just flew in from Florida. We went on a family vacation that had been postponed twice. We finally ended up taking it. I flew Southwest Air, and they're no slouch when it comes to sanitation, but I actually felt more comfortable in your guys' movie theater than I did on the airplane that's governed by the Federal Aviation Commission. So again, kudos. It's absolutely perfectly done.
Yeah, and safety is great. And the other thing that's great that's coming out is we finally have some new movies to show people. So, I mean, it's so great that you can now come and see a new movie at the theater with some things that are coming out. Right now, there are several great movies that are out right now. There's a road rage thriller with Russell Crowe called Unhinged from a new studio called Solstice. There's The New Mutants from Fox. There's Tenet, which, of course, we're going to be talking about, that you and I have seen, and I know I loved it, and I think you did too, so we'll be talking about that. And then new this week is a movie called The Broken Hearts Gallery, which is a rom-com. It's getting great reviews on Rotten Tomatoes. I think this could be some people's first date night out to the theater in quite some time, which will be very interesting and I think something that people have been waiting for. And as we're doing this, James, we're going to bring back some retro films every single week. So on top of these new releases that are out, we're going to bring back retro films every week. The price for the retro films will only be $5. This week we've got Black Panther, Goonies, and Shrek. But then we'll be releasing an additional slate of new movies every single week, so you can see new movies and you can see some of our old $5 retro selections as well. And that even includes, we have all of our old pricing promotions there. People have been asking us, do you still have your $5 Tuesdays? And the answer is yes, we certainly do. You can still come on out to any Marcus Theater on Tuesdays. Admission is only $5 for any movie. And you also get a free popcorn if you're a Magical Movie Rewards member, which is free to sign up. So, again, a great safe experience, new movies, and our pricing promotions like $5 Tuesdays are still in effect. So it's a great time to come back.
Yeah, and I know the you mentioned the movie Magical Rewards. That's something I signed up for because I've been obviously going to the movies all the time. So it's a great thing. If you haven't signed up for it, it's like Brett said, it's free to do. Sign up for that. You get your free popcorn on Tuesdays. There's all sorts of other perks that you get, and it's a great way to reward yourself for seeing movies. You mentioned Unhinged. I saw the previews for that. I enjoy Russell Crowe. It slightly reminded me of Michael Douglas's movie Falling Down. Have you seen Unhinged? Is it similar at all?
Well, it's similar to that. I can tell you, you're a little more on edge during this movie than you were in Falling Down. But it is actually frightening in some aspects. I mean, the movie is about a woman who causes an incident that sets off Russell Crowe, and he's enraged with her throughout the entire movie. And there are some scenes that are specifically uncomfortable, but just great in terms of just tension that happened on screen with this movie. So it would be a great kind of straightforward kind of action film for anyone to go see. So I'd recommend to go see Unhinged if you're not in the mood to go see something that's a little more complicated in Tenet or anything else that we have on the screens.
And you and I both saw Tenet now. I adored it. Christopher Nolan, may as well go ahead and certify him as a genius. I love that the movie, for those of people who aren't familiar with the movie, it takes a little bit of thinking. But how would you describe the movie? What's the best way to tell people about the movie who don't know what it's about?
Okay. The best way to tell people about this movie is not to really describe the movie and tell them to just go see it on their own. Because I think one of the problems, James, that I ran into is it's impossible to tell people about the plot of this movie without giving too much away.
Yeah.
I mean, even if you try to read the synopsises on IMDb or Rotten Tomatoes or any of those sites, frankly, you and I could read them now and tell you that there's nothing about those descriptions that really describes what you need to be prepared for to see this film. But if I had to take a shot at it and tell me how good I do, you have a protagonist played by John David Washington. He's trying to thwart the end of the world. Meanwhile, you have an antagonist in Kenneth Branagh, who is working with a group to try to orchestrate the end of the world. And the group that he's trying to orchestrate that with happens to be composed of stakeholders from the future, who use a tactic called inversion, which is simply moving time in reverse to try to make this all happen. That's my best shot at it. How'd I do?
Yeah, I think that's more succinct than I could have possibly done it, actually. There's so much that happens. And it's one of those movies, like I think I told you before when we were discussing doing this on air, that my wife was kind of hesitant. She's like, yeah, okay, I'll go see it with you. But then not only did she love it, she's like, I need to see that again, just because continuity issues are an issue in normal film. I cannot imagine the headache that continuity on this film must have been for the people worried about that.
Oh, yeah. People don't realize that when they film movies, they film them out of sequence. Think how hard this was for the actors every day when they came into work to try to do this. I mean, this must have been very difficult for them to do, knowing that everything was in Nolan's head and trying to interpret what he was doing. And I would say this is the one thing I tell people. You can't watch this film like you would watch a regular movie. I made that mistake. I made the mistake of starting to watch the film and trying to solve the puzzle right away. And you can't do that with this movie. You've got to just sit back and take it all in and know the information is going to come to you in pieces throughout the whole process. And I would say one thing for me was the greatest frustrations of this movie are its greatest strengths. We talked about the fact that it's impossible to basically describe the plot very succinctly. It's nearly impossible to figure out everything that's going on in just one sitting. And I think what's important for people to know is the movie drops you into just pure chaos. There's a scene in an opera house where John David Washington is trying to extract this asset amidst a terrorist attack, and it just drops you right into this chaotic, uneasy tone of a situation that continues throughout the entire movie. And you need to be prepared for that this is unlike any movie you've probably ever seen before you go see it.
Yeah, if you're a fan of Christopher Nolan and you've seen Inception, for example, it's there are similarities that can be drawn between. It's a little bit like watching Inception and Memento and The Matrix all kind of rolled into an action flick is the best way I can describe it without giving away too much.
Yeah, it's actually, I tell people, it's not this simple, but Memento is almost like a children's story compared to what you need to try to put together in Tenet. And I love Memento. Actually, that's my favorite Chris Nolan film because it was the first one that I saw directed by him. But yeah, I mean, this movie just has moments that you'll absolutely love to go see. I mean, there is a scene with a 747 that is just spectacular when you see what they do with this plane and the action sequences around it. There is a car chase scene that I can assure anyone is unlike any car chase you've ever seen on film. And that's saying something because I thought that was the mastery of this movie. They took something like a car chase, something we've seen in a ton of films, and it's in a lot of them, obviously, every Fast and Furious, all kinds of other things you might have seen, and they made it different, and they made it just spectacular, and I never thought that I could see something like that was so original and so spectacular from a car chase, but they managed to pull that off, and it was really neat how they did it.
Yeah, I think I told my wife, I said, this is going to be 2020's The Matrix. It's like The Matrix kind of broke ground when it came out in the 90s. I think this is much like that, where it's going to be the new bar for how these types of thrillers are done. We'll pause right there, come back talking more with Brett Hoffman of Marcus Theaters all about our review of the movie Tenet. Please stand by.
Hi, this is Chin Han, and you're listening to Geek to Me Radio.
Welcome back to Geek to Me Radio. I am your host, James Enstall. We're talking with Brett Hoffman, director of Marcus Theaters, on the review of the new movie Tenet.
Yeah, I think so too. And you look at the performances in this movie. John David Washington, he's spectacular. Robert Pattinson, which admittingly, I know more because my wife dragged me to all the Twilight films. I know him more from those and can't believe what a performance he put in. Man, is it great. And what I think actually might actually be undershadowed here is Kenneth Branagh. He put together a performance, and while I haven't seen a lot of his Shakespearean work, I'll tell you, this is as good as any performance I've ever seen Kenneth Branagh put on. And I thought he was just spectacular as kind of the main antagonist in the film.
Yeah, he was terrifying. And I've seen some of his Shakespeare work. I loved him. One of my favorite movies of all time is Dead Again, with his at the time wife Emma Thompson. But he's obviously a talented actor, but he was terrifying in this as the adversary.
Yeah, I'd say so. And people ask me too, well, did you not like anything about the movie? And actually, I wanted to think about what you thought about this. I actually thought, admittedly, there were some parts where Christopher Nolan probably could have helped the audience out a little bit more and not made things so ambiguous and maybe given us a few more hints while we were watching for the first time. But going back to the greatest frustrations are its greatest strengths, that makes it more interesting when you sit on your couch at home and ponder what happened during this movie. I think that is actually probably one of the greatest gifts he's given us is I've been thinking about this movie since the time I watched it and can't stop thinking about it and what I'm going to look for in multiple viewings.
Yeah, absolutely. I think it's, you and I talked off air. I think it's a smart movie. It doesn't dumb things down and like, okay, here's why this is happening and here's why this is happening as some screenwriters tend to do sometimes. And I think that kind of makes the audience engage from the beginning. Like they, like you said, they thrust you into this. And I think it makes you sit up. You got to pay attention. You have to really focus on what's going on or there will be things you miss. And I think the fact that he didn't, I don't want to say dumb it down, but the fact that he didn't dumb it down is refreshing. And I almost felt, am I smart enough to see this movie? Am I missing something? But in a good way.
Yeah, I certainly came out of it thinking, you know, exactly. You know, should I have been seeing this? Am I missing a step?
Yeah.
What were the things I didn't put together? but certainly, if you read online, which I would tell people, don't go and read the spoilers before you've seen this movie. That will completely ruin it. Go see it for the first time. If after that you want to go look up some things and kind of read about some theories and kind of prepare yourself for the second viewing, which you should do anyhow, do it that way. But do not ruin this movie. And I'd say it's best to go into this movie cold and just know you're going to be in for a wild ride. Don't try to solve anything. Let it come to you. And I think that's the best way to experience this.
I agree. And I will say on, obviously we're all quarantined. We're all binge watching things at home. We just started watching The Night Manager from a few years ago, and Elizabeth Debicki is also in that, and she just amazes me with her performance, how she's just has this gravitas to her for an actress of her age. It feels like she's an old soul, and both in Night Manager and as Kat in Tenet, she's just brilliant.
Yeah, as I didn't mention her before. Pretty much every performance in this is just spot on. And I think that's a tribute to Nolan that he is able to bring those performances out of people. And as we talked about it, I don't know how basically any of these actors or actresses in this film even understood what the mission truly was, because it was so hard for us to understand. I wonder if Nolan sat them down and had a Tenet class and kind of walked them through the specifics of this plot before they had to do that. I know they read the script, but I don't think even from reading the script one time, you're going to figure out everything that's going on.
No, like I said, the continuity people who made sure that everything was the same must have had Excedrin strength migraines to go through all this and keep everything straight as they're filming this, much less keeping the story coherent. Because as a viewer, I kind of had to be like, okay, I think this is what's going on. But yeah, it definitely deserves a second and probably a third viewing. This will be one that I certainly buy, which happens very rarely these days because so much stuff is on demand. But if I really, really dig a movie, I'll buy the physical copy. And I think that's going to have to happen with Tenet.
Yeah, this is a great film, and you can watch it over and over. Admittedly, I've read some things, and there are lots of different fan theories on here, and I've read them, and all of which could be true. So I think that's what's great about this movie, is it can be open to interpretation. I also think this is another movie where, if you haven't been to a theater yet, this is a great movie to come back and see in a theater, because it was meant to be put on the big screen.
Yeah.
There's some great action in it. You want to be immersed. This movie is an immersive experience, and it's one that probably only sitting in a dark movie theater auditorium that can provide. So I think if you haven't been to a theater yet, what a great time to come on out and experience something like this and just zone in to the movie that's Tenet.
Yeah, and as we mentioned at the beginning, it's perfectly safe. I felt perfectly safe. My wife's a little bit more apprehensive than I am, but she admitted afterwards, she goes, yeah, that was great. I felt perfectly safe with all the precautions that you've taken and how safe everything was, how clean everything was. And that's the Chesterfield location, so I can only assume they're all like that. And it's great that you guys have taken such painstaking precautions to make sure everyone can come back to the movie safely.
Yeah, and that's one thing that we very much wanted to do. And as we talked about earlier, you can check us out on marcustheaters.com. You can see all the protocols that are in place for your return to the cinemas. You can purchase your tickets there. And you can also purchase your food and beverage there. And we're really encouraging that to provide kind of that low contact experience. And for anyone listening right now, I've got a code here. Why don't I give a code out that will give people a little bit of discount if they're interested in purchasing. You know, if they're interested in purchasing your food and beverage early, this code is good through the 17th of September, so this Thursday, September 17th. If you order your food and beverage in advance, and you can do that at marcustheaters.com/order, or you can do that on the Marcus Theaters mobile app, go ahead and order your food. This is good till September 17th, and use the code SEPTEMBER30. So put in the code SEPTEMBER30 during the checkout process, and you'll get 30% off your entire food and beverage order. So 30% off, go on marcustheaters.com, go on the Marcus Theaters mobile app. September 30 will get you 30% off your food and beverage order. And check us out there, and make sure to buy your tickets online as well, because you might also stumble on some other movies we've got playing that you'd be interested in seeing.
Absolutely. I know the heartbreaking death of Chadwick Boseman. I would love to see Black Panther again on the big screen. So that's great that you guys are putting those out there.
Yeah, I mean, we had some great success playing 42. We played 42 last week, which is another tremendous movie of his. Black Panther's coming back now. You got to love The Goonies. And you'll be seeing other films come back over the course of the next couple weeks. Over the next couple weeks, you'll see movies like The Empire Strikes Back come out, for instance, from Disney, which if you've never seen The Empire Strikes Back on the big screen, I know everyone's seen it at home. You just got to see that movie on the big screen. So we'll have that coming back, which I think by your reaction, James, you might be coming back to see that one on the big screen.
Definitely. Oh, my gosh, that's my favorite.
And then, you know, in the course of October, we're going to bring back other ones along with these new releases. We'll have The Nightmare Before Christmas. We'll have all kinds of other things going on. So plenty to do at the theater. You can see it all on marcustheaters.com or a mobile app. But I'll tell you, just for everyone out there, we are just so happy and excited to be able to bring movie going back to your community. And we're so happy to be able to do it in a great, safe, and comfortable environment for everyone as well. So anything we can do to provide some great movie memories, we're just so happy to do and welcome people back to the big screen.
I'm excited. I'm going to bring a buddy of mine to go see The New Mutants at the St. Charles location, I think, this weekend. So I'm very excited.
Yeah, well, tell us about your experience, and like I said, we hope everything goes well, and I'm interested to hear more of your theories on Tenet, because like you said, I think our second, third, and fourth viewings of this movie are going to be a lot different than our first. Let's
definitely
say that.
Yeah, knowing going in, now that we've had one viewing, the second viewing will definitely be interesting, so we'll have to keep in touch and swap theories about that.
All right. Well, otherwise, I hope everyone has a great and safe time at the movies, at work, and beyond. So thanks very much for having me on, James.
Thank you. Brett Hoffman, Director of Marketing for Marcus Theaters, at Marcus Theaters on Twitter and Instagram. Keep up with them, and of course, download that app. Brett, thanks so much for your time this evening.
Thank you very much. Have a great one.
You too. My thanks once again to Brett Hoffman. We're going to take our next break, come back, and chat with creator David Pepos about his Kickstarter that he's got for his brand new project, The OZ. Stand by.
Hey, this is Dave Desmalchin. You're listening to Geek to Me Radio.
Welcome back to the show. The last two segments, we were talking with Brett Hoffman all about Marcus Theaters, one of our fine show sponsors, the official movie sponsor of Geek to Me Radio. Make sure to tell you about our other sponsor, the City of St. Charles. That's the Greater St. Charles Convention and Visitors Bureau. And, of course, you know the website, discoverstcharles.com, for all of the cool things there are to see and do in the greater area of St. Charles. Legends and Lanterns. Man, it's September already. Halloween's just around the corner. You can feel it in the air. It's getting a little cooler out. We're getting into that crisp autumn season. Halloween will be here soon. Legends and Lanterns is gearing up safely in this time of COVID in which we live. And we just had a meeting about Christmas traditions, which is boggling the mind to think about because it feels like it should still be May. But they're already talking about Christmas traditions, how to do that safely and effectively, keeping all the people participating in the festival, as well as you, the visitor, safe. Social distancing, mask wearing, sanitizing, all the things that can be done and what it might look like if things keep going. Hopefully we find a vaccine soon, things get better, but we're going to make sure that we proceed apace regardless, and we're going to do it in the best way possible. You can check out the website, plan your trip. If you're from the area, go down there on Main Street, support the local small businesses, get a great restaurant at the little deli there on North Main, or you know, pop in the sweet shop in the 300 block of South Main, get some fudge or get some ice cream. Go out there, support local small businesses. That's what makes up the City of St. Charles. Once again, that website, discoverstcharles.com. As we always say here, it's an historically good time. Without further ado, let's jump to the next guest. Talking now with comic creator David Pepos about his new project. He's already got Spencer and Locke under his belt, Going to the Chapel, huge success, and now we've got The OZ coming to us. David, how are you?
I'm doing great. Thank you so much for having me. I'm so excited to catch up. And yeah, just to talk about my new Kickstarter project, The OZ, which is like, what if Mad Max and the Hurt Locker took place in The Wizard of Oz?
The concepts you have for all of your creations are always something that's like, you must have come up with it in a dream somehow, and it's like this mad genius. Talk a little bit about where the genesis of this idea came from for The OZ.
Yeah, well, you know, this book has been in the works for a very long time. This was one of the first three ideas I came up with after the first volume of Spencer and Locke came out. And for those who don't remember that book, the book was What If Calvin and Hobbes Grew Up in Sin City? And, you know, while I'm so thrilled with how the response was to that book, that was certainly not a sure thing while we were making it, while it was coming out. And so at the time, I wasn't sure if I was going to get to do another comic. If people didn't like Spencer and Locke, I probably would have not done another book. Thankfully, people really liked it. And so I came up with a few ideas, including Spencer and Locke 2, Going to the Chapel, and this, The OZ. And where The OZ came from was I wanted to try something in a different genre. I love writing crime stories, but I was like, what's the biggest swing I can take here? And I had thought about sci-fi and fantasy. And sci-fi's I've since written sci-fi books, but they're more challenging for me. You've got to come up with very distinct rules for the world and then have your characters navigate that. Fantasy, on the other hand, is kind of the opposite. The rules of the world can kind of mold to your characters and to your themes. And so there's a lot of nuance that you can explore. So I had written down almost a mood board of different fantasy inspirations that I grew up with. Things like Lord of the Rings or Lloyd Alexander or Piers Anthony or Harry Potter. And I wrote down The Wizard of Oz. And as my cursor was flashing on the word Oz, I thought, you know, it's so short, but it's so iconic. What if it was an acronym for something? I thought of like DMZ. And then I said, oh, it's the Occupied Zone. And that's when I realized that I wasn't just writing a fantasy story, but a war story as well. Huh. And so that idea, you know, just like Spencer and Locke, I always think when I'm doing kind of a remix of popular pop culture, I say, is there something in the original text that supports my new thesis? For Spencer and Locke, it was maybe Calvin so vividly imagining his own imaginary best friend isn't a benign quirk, but a symptom of a darker pathology, of a more a harrowing upbringing. For The OZ, we've reimagined Dorothy Gale killing the Wicked Witch of the West as the beginning of a power vacuum that's left Oz in years of brutal civil war. And so our story picks up a generation later with Dorothy's granddaughter and namesake, who's a disillusioned Iraq war veteran. She's come back home from her time overseas with some real scars and some real trauma and some real guilt. And she's trying to put the pieces of her life back together in Liberty, Kansas. Unfortunately, a tornado strikes, and this new Dorothy finds herself trapped in the war-torn land of Oz. So she's going to have to navigate her past and her grandmother's former friends if she hopes to survive the occupied zone, or as the locals call it, the OZ.
Very, very interesting. And the Oz lore, obviously everyone's familiar with the movie The Wizard of Oz, Judy Garland, but there's all the books that Frank L. Baum wrote, and then there's one of my favorite childhood movies, which terrified me but delighted me at the same time, was Return to Oz. So did you pull from other aspects of Oz lore other than Wizard of Oz? And my biggest question is, does TikTok, the Army of Oz, show up?
So, you know, it's funny because, we really had to strike that right balance because, like you said, while many people know about the Judy Garland film, that's actually the one thing that's not in the public domain. It's all the original Baum novels are considered public domain, all 20 of them. So, it's sort of, threading the needle a bit of what's in the popular consciousness, but what are the Easter eggs that we can take out? I'm glad you mentioned Return to Oz. I love that movie. That book is – or that movie is certainly in our book's DNA. It's funny. I'm holding TikTok back. If there's the demand for another story of the OZ, there are going to be certain characters that we have in our back pocket that are going to play some bigger roles. Characters like Ozma, for example.
Yeah.
But my favorite Return to Oz character actually does play a fairly important role as our story continues. Jack Pumpkinhead was always my favorite. And Jack, he makes a brief appearance in our first issue that's on Kickstarter right now. But issues 2 and 3, which we'll be running campaigns for next year, he plays a bigger and more important role because, I've always loved that design. And as you see the pieces of the story start to come together, you realize that he plays a very important role that only he could play. It's funny. The advantage of working on a book like this with the OZ, where we've got our first issue complete, but we're in the process of working on getting the art on our second and third installments now, is that we do have some room for maneuverability. And we've been hearing certain characters that I was like, oh, maybe they're too much of a deep cut. And as I've heard them again and again and again, now the gears are turning a little bit. And I'm like, I wonder if there's a way we can fit them in with some of the sequences we've already written. I've been talking with artist Ruben Rojas about different Easter eggs that we can take from the greater Oz lore.
It's an interesting thing because we talked about before when we had you on to talk about Spencer and Locke for the second one, Roach Riley's appearance. If I asked you if like Bill Watterson had reached out or anything or had any discussion been happened, obviously the people who own the rights to Oz, they're probably very protective. So what maneuvering did you have to get to? Obviously, I am assuming we won't see the Tin Man or the Scarecrow because that's not considered, I guess, public domain.
We'll pause right there. Come back talking more with David Papos about the OZ. Please stand by. Follow the yellow brick road.
Hi, this is Shannon Farnan, the original voice of Wonder Woman, and you're listening to Geek to Me Radio.
And we're back talking with creator David Papos about his project. You can back it on Kickstarter. I've already done so. There's a few days left. Help them get to their next stretch goal. It's a fantastic project. And we'd asked him before we took our last break about getting the rights for some of these characters from the world of Oz.
Actually, they are. Anything from the original Baum novels, all 20 of them, those are considered public domain.
Oh, okay.
I should probably rephrase. When I say that the Judy Garland film is not considered public domain, I should say that anything invented specifically for the Judy Garland film. So the big example is the Ruby Slippers. The Ruby Slippers were created for Technicolor, whereas in the original Baum novel, they were silver. And so, the Tin Man and Scarecrow and Lion, they are crucial to this book. I feel like that core quartet really informs the flavor of this book. So much of this series, while our Dorothy is a descendant of the original, we get to see how the war in Oz has touched these iconic characters over the years. For example, the Tin Man has been destroyed and rebuilt so many times that he's been turned into this towering war machine freedom fighter.
Hmm.
And you can see Ruben Rojas' main cover. He's got the Tin Man in all of his glory. You know, the Scarecrow, meanwhile, is a guy who wanted a brain. But what happens to that guy when he realizes that he doesn't have all the answers and that his ego keeps driving him to that Rubik's Cube of trying to solve everything and it doesn't get any better? Or the lion who wanted courage. And how does that calculus change when you're no longer fighting just for yourself, but when you're the king of the entire animal kingdom? You know, the original Dorothy, her former friends have not been on the same side for a very long time. And it's going to take her granddaughter to try to bring together some form of lasting peace.
Wow. It's so intriguing. And obviously, Toto's long gone too, since dogs don't live as long as humans, and this is Dorothy's granddaughter. And I assume chickens probably don't have that lifespan, so we won't see Melina from The Return to Oz. Does she have any companions that she goes in with?
Dorothy will be entering Oz by herself, but she's going to find some companions, and some of them are going to be more recognizable than others. We've got some fun people to sort of join her makeshift army. Without spoiling too much, there's going to be some characters that people are going to love, particularly our take on the Wizard of Oz. When you watch the original film or read the original books, he's kind of that con man with a heart of gold. You know, usually when people lie to you, you get mad about it, but it's hard to be mad at somebody like the Wizard of Oz.
Mm-hmm.
He's kind of that he's just slick enough that you say, oh, well, that's just the wizard. That's who he is. And our take on him, I think, really speaks to that degree of soft power it's the mind over matter. I think when people get to reintroduce themselves to the wizard, they're going to fall in love with the character.
And obviously, we have another thread that's kind of hanging out there with Wicked. Is there a musical number in one of the four books for this coming up?
Yeah, you know, I love the smell of flying monkeys in the morning. I used to joke that if we made $1 million in this Kickstarter, we'd try to figure out a musical component. But actually, we did come up with a theme song for the OZ. It was our first social stretch goal. My friend George Marston and his sister's band Bad Death actually produced it. It's a song called Heart of Tin. It's on YouTube right now. Anyone can watch it. And yeah, it's just really this kind of beautiful, haunting Kansas ballad that really kind of paints a stark picture of the war-torn land of Oz. And I couldn't be more thrilled with it. It's kind of one of those things that it'd be hard to do with a traditional publisher. But because I'm on Kickstarter, we really have that agility to really do whatever we want that will sort of fit within the structures of our shipping and our schedule for the campaign.
And you had such success with Kickstarter. Kickstarter is amazing for people like you who have these great things. You can just do them on your own. You don't have the restraints or the, I should say, the cuffs on your hands creatively
right.
that you'd have working for a large company. So it's amazing you've done so well with the projects you've done. And you've already surpassed your original goal for the OZ. So you're well into your stretch goals now.
Yes. We've been so fortunate. This is my first Kickstarter, and I'm friendly with people like Charlie Stickney, the creator of White Ash. My friend Riley Grant just finished his Kickstarter for a book called The Jump. Russell Nohelty, who has a Kickstarter up right now for his book Ichabod Jones. They were all really instrumental in kind of nudging me towards Kickstarter. And, they prepare you for the worst, but they never tell you what happens when you're funded in 2 hours. And so it's been a really fun, exciting roller coaster of a learning curve, just figuring out, you know, how can we keep adding value to the book? How can we keep bringing new readers to the table? Because ultimately, that's the reason I did Kickstarter. When the series is done, when we finish our third and final campaign for the OZ, we'll have 140 pages of art. That's not including covers. That's not including pinups. That's not including printing and shipping. So I promise I'm not getting rich off of this. The reason why I did Kickstarter was because it's, you know, there are some people that buy their books primarily in comic shops, some who buy them primarily on Amazon or Comixology, some who buy them primarily at conventions, and then those who buy their books primarily on crowdfunding like Kickstarter. And I realized that there was an entire demographic of readers that I had done no outreach to. And so I wanted to introduce ourselves to the Kickstarter community with my absolute A game. The pandemic also really kind of crystallized my line of thinking.
Yeah.
Because, you know, we had many traditional publishers interested in the book, but the acquisitions pipeline can be chaotic in the best of circumstances. We had conversations with publishers where they would be really excited, and then they'd say, give us a couple of weeks because we got to get our ducks in a row with some other stuff. And then the conversation would start over again, almost like Groundhog Day. When Diamond had its temporary shutdown, it made the pipeline even more narrow. People were staggering out even more releases. And so that made me realize that we don't have to wait for permission as creators anymore, that we can go directly to the readership base. And because of the amazing readers that we've picked up with Spencer and Locke and Spencer and Locke 2 and Going to the Chapel, and now all of our new fans that we've found on Kickstarter, we're kind of able to have the direct market crowd and the Kickstarter crowd meet at the same table and break bread together. And that's always been my goal as a creator, is just how do we build that wider consensus and, you know, really kind of reassemble that diaspora of people who want to read comics.
And speaking of COVID, obviously, we had to cancel Wizard World here in your hometown as well as mine, St. Louis, this past summer. And you were supposed to be here, and I was so excited to meet you and have you sign my Spencer and Locke books. It's obviously a changed landscape, too, as far as the lack of conventions, everything like that. But I guess the Zoom conferences and the virtual cons seem to be doing okay, but it's just not the same. Are you planning to come to the rescheduled Wizard World St. Louis still?
Absolutely. You know, my thought is, as soon as it's safe, I'm very excited to go back into the convention scene. I had 16 conventions scheduled this year, and I was sad that I was only able to make two of them before the pandemic shut everything down. But yes, you know, I absolutely want to do a hometown convention. It's been on my bucket list for a long time. You know, I'm actually very pleased that our premier tier for the OZ, which was do a store signing in any city in the continental U.S., we got a St. Louis backer on that one. So I'm very excited to coordinate that also when the travel schedule is safe. It's a whole new world out there. And I think, you know, any creator who hasn't said that COVID has made them rethink how they're going to do business, they're either lying or deluding themselves. I this is absolutely the definition of a disruptive event. And I think everybody is sort of rethinking, how do we diversify? How do we, how do we reach out to more people? And you see it with big name creators like Scott Snyder, who launched his Kickstarter for his book Nocterra on the same day as we launched ours. Or, you know, Boom Studios with their new book Berserker with Keanu Reeves, where they're on Kickstarter right now. I think there are certainly pros and cons to all of it, and it's kind of growing pains, learning curve, whatever you want to call it. But I do think every publisher is trying to figure out how to make themselves more robust in case anything like the Diamond shutdown occurs again. And I think while it can be a little chaotic and a little stressful, because, you know, change and uncertainty is chaotic and stressful, I think ultimately having that kind of sober look at the way we do business as an industry, it can only help us moving forward.
I completely agree. And once again, the Kickstarter, just go there and search either David's name, David Pepose, P-E-P-O-S-E, or search the O-Z, and you'll be able to find the Kickstarter. Already surpassed the goal. We're into stretch goals now, but obviously the more the better to get the new stretch goals in place. And this is a 3 or 4 issue arc total planned.
So we are going to do 3 campaigns, and each of our issues are double sized. We wanted to make sure all of our readers got plenty of bang for their buck. Additionally, with every single tier that we do, we're offering digital PDFs of the first issue of Spencer and Locke and Going to the Chapel. So even if you throw in for $10, you'll be getting 88 pages of worth of story from me. Plus, you'll be getting a dozen additional PDFs from indie creators from across the industry as part of our digital comics extravaganza that's already been unlocked. So we've got books from Justin Jordan, Ryland Grant, Frank Gogol, Kevin Eastman, the co-creator of the Ninja Turtles, and a murderer's row of indie comics talent who have so graciously agreed to throw in. Like I said, it's my first Kickstarter, and so I want to make sure that readers who are rolling the dice on me, who have not read any of my previous work, feel like they're getting their money's worth. And we've got so many different tiers and rewards for all of our backers at any price point, at any budget, because we want, like I said, this is not about the money for me. This is about just getting as many readers introduced to the material as possible. And you may think you know the story of Oz, but this is the story of what comes next. So join us, become a Yellow Brick Road Warrior, and order your copy of the OZ today.
That's perfect. And speaking as someone who has had some of your other work in my collection, I can definitely say for anyone listening, roll the dice. Go ahead and do it and back the OZ on Kickstarter. And we all know that writing, even the best writing, needs great art. What are the artists who are on the project with you?
We'll pause right there, take our last break, come back and discuss the book's creative team. Please stand by.
This is Diane Pershing, the voice of Poison Ivy, and you're listening to Geek to Me Radio.
And we're back for our final segment here on Geek to Me Radio. I'm your host, James Enstall. We're talking with creator David Pepos about his project, The OZ, based on the history and the lore of The Wizard of Oz, a fantastic creation. I think it's genius. And before we took that last break, we were asking him about the creative team, the artists and people assigned to help him, not assigned, but that he chose to help him with the book.
Yeah, I'm working with just the most amazing crew for the OZ. My artist and co-creator, Ruben Rojas, colorist Whitney Kogar from the Eisner Award-winning Giant Days, and ace letterer DC Hopkins. They are just the most incredible team. Ruben Rojas is one of the most, if not the single most talented artist you haven't heard of yet. He's got a style that's kind of like if Dan Mora and Sean Murphy had a baby. he's able to turn on a dime from these really kinetic action sequences to these very moody and soulful moments of human emotion. But the thing I love most about Ruben is he's probably one of the most single talented designers I've ever worked with. The way that he fleshes out the land of Oz and the characters that reside within it are just it gives so much energy and depth and detail to our world. If you see on our main Kickstarter page, our main cover from Ruben with the Tin Man blew me away so much that when we were working on pitch pages together and I saw that cover, I said, Ruben, keep drawing. I promise you that I will make this book come out. Pairing him with Whitney Kogar is just a match made in heaven. Whitney and I talked so much about what the Mad Max version of Star Wars would look like for this book, really getting that grit and intensity from Fury Road, but also that sense of scale and scope and wonder from Star Wars, similar to the way that you know instinctively what Tatooine or Hoth or Dagobah or Cloud City are about based on their unique palette and vibe and temperature and internal high concepts. The Land of Oz is the same way. The bombed out Emerald Cities can be very different than the Deadly Desert, which can be very different than the mountaintops of Ix, which can be very different than the Wicked Witch's Castle. And so that's that variety in setting not only gives us more obstacles that we can throw at Dorothy and her crew, but really allows us to raise the scale and the stakes of our story accordingly. And Dave Hopkins is just, you know, I can't say enough great things about him. He's our letterer. He's the ultimate team player. He's so considerate and deliberate with how his contributions interact on Whitney and Ruben's art. And he's very patient with me when I realize that means I have to cut half a line and half the balloons. But, you know, I'm so fortunate to have this team because we have such a positive feedback loop. I loved Ruben's art so much that I shotgunned through 6 standard-sized issues of the OZ. Whereas, Ruben is so excited by my scripts that he keeps going, and Whitney's so excited by his inks that she just knocks them out of the park. And then Dave Hopkins is so excited that he really brings his A game with the lettering. And it's a really fun way to bring a comic over the finish line. We're all just so excited and enthused about each other's work that it really inspires us to bring our A game. And rounding up the pack, you know, that also gives us some room for some really amazing variant cover artists. Mon House has joined us from Spencer and Locke and Going to the Chapel. He's got our Winged Monkey variant, our Death from Above cover. That I actually teamed up with him. I did the colors on it. I'm really happy with how that turned out. Rio Burton has our movie poster style cover. We called it Apocalypse Oz. And Kenneth Wagnon did a really terrific Akira homage. We call it our Hit and Run cover. And Kenneth, he was very busy working on his own graphic novel. I tried to approach him for another project. And I think he was a little skeptical when I hit him up like a month or so later saying, hey, I'd love if you could do a cover for me for an upcoming Kickstarter. And he was like, I don't know, man. And I said, no, hear me out. I want to do a riff on the Akira slide, but it's a Humvee. The driver's door has been ripped out. Dorothy's firing her rifle outside of the door, and the Tin Man is on the back firing out of a wrist cannon. And he's like, oh, okay, you pegged me really good. everybody's work is really just upping everybody else's game. And, you know, I've been so fortunate working with creators like George Santiago Jr. and Jason Smith and Colin Bell on Spencer and Locke, and Gavin Guidry and Liz Kramer and Ariana Mayer on Going to the Chapel. And I feel like this team for the OZ, it just they've continued the winning streak and they've kept the bar incredibly high. While I think this is some of my best work writing-wise, I know for a fact this is one of the most beautiful books I've ever had the good fortune to work on. And I think as far as the art is concerned, the OZ goes toe-to-toe with any book in the direct market.
Very nice. It sounds like the energy is just feeding back from writing to art and ink and back again.
Exactly. We just keep challenging each other to up our game, and so far we haven't backed away from the challenge.
Very nice. Let people know where they can find you online, how they can keep up with you socially, etc.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, first off, you can follow the OZ comic on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. That'll take you straight to our social media platforms. You can also visit bit.ly/theozcomic. That'll take you straight to our Kickstarter page. You can follow me on Twitter and Instagram at Pepos D. It's my last name and first initial, or David Pepos Comics on Facebook. And last but not least, I always tell people to subscribe to my newsletter, Pep Talks, at bit.ly/pepnews. That's where I tease all of my latest projects. I teased the OZ on there for the better part of a year. And so if you want to know what else I've got coming down the pike, Pep Talks is the best place to find out.
Perfect. We look forward to keeping up with you. Continued success on the rest of the Kickstarter for the OZ, and we will hopefully get to see you here in St. Louis at Wizard World.
Absolutely. Looking forward to it.
That's our time for today. My thanks once again to Brett Hoffman of Marcus Theaters, marcustheaters.com, to go see all your movies. And of course, thanks to David Pepos for coming on to talk about his project, the OZ, back on Kickstarter. Until next week, my friends.
It's not in the way you watch I sound.
Thank you, Emerald City. Good night.
Hi, this is James Enstall, host of Geek to Me Radio, and in honor of my favorite Themyscirian, I've decided to become an Amazon warrior.
Hera, give me strength.
The next time you want to buy something from Amazon, go to geektomeradio.com first and click on our Amazon affiliate link. Simply shop like you normally would, and when you check out, a small percentage will go towards supporting the show. So remember, the next time you want to search Amazon for the latest Wonder Woman graphic novel or parts for your invisible jet... Click through from geektomeradio.com first.
The world was in peril. Would you have me stand by and do nothing?